top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
Joey's just an ordinary kid who never believed in magic tricks or superpowers.
Did you see that?
Or evil spirits, living ghosts, or haunted houses.
No, don't go in there!
But that was before Joey began Making Contact, rated PG.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 275, Making Contact, a.k.a. Joey.
Joey.
Yeah, which is a good thing that this is a kid's movie, because a diminutive for a grown-ass man is not very appropriate. So, nor is this movie in many cases, because it's a weird one.
Oh, yeah, this is one of the those I would call like an anti-kids movie. It's a movie like, let's say, Return to Oz or something, which is ostensibly made for kids, but it's so either terrifying or tonally off or just... In the case of this one, it's bizarre in every sense of the word, that you think to yourself, like, who is this for? It's too...
It's for us. This is our bailiwick.
Exactly.
If something is so wrong that defies all focus group testing, offends all sensibilities, is ruinous to its target, offends them in any way, like, we are your men.
Now, it's interesting because you did say AKA Joey, and that is the original release title in its... homeland. You're shaking your head. Am I getting it wrong? Or?
No, I'm just saying that's like box office poison, to quote Norm Macdonald. Like calling your movie Joey, or just like...
Well, what about like Marty? Just... Or Charlie, or Harvey, or all these, you know, like these great classics.
There's a certain set of expectations that come with a horror film.
Was this even a horror film?
I don't know. I'm just thinking sci-fi? I'm contradicting myself, because Annabelle is the exact same thing. Call that what you want. It's barely a horror, but that's also another just name.
Or what? I mean, what, you take the word baby and attach to a name, and then all of a sudden it's Rosemary's Baby. What's the difference?
Mountaintop Motel Massacre is what I want.
Well, Joey is the title of this film in its native Germany. Now, it's interesting that I say native Germany, because it is a West German production directed by Roland Emmerich, who ended up becoming a Hollywood powerhouse, and we're going to talk about that in a bit. But it's a German production, but it's almost like a Canadian task shelter movie, in a sense. It was shot in America. It was shot with American actors, but it was released in the land it was shot in a 79-minute cut as Making Contact in 1985. Now, in Germany, it was released with the title Joey, which you seem to take great umbrage with. I really don't. I don't know. I don't know why you're so Mikey. There's a horror film right there.
It's essentially meaningless.
Mikey. Remember Brian Bosel, I believe, from Family Ties? He played a...
Nobody remembers that.
I guarantee some of our listeners remember that. But anyhow, I remember that. That's all that counts. It was released with 20 more minutes in Germany. And watching this film, and we decided we're going to stick with the American version. Watching this film at 80 minutes long and just thinking that there's a version out there with an extra 20 minutes. I can only imagine what more lunacy that those 20 minutes could hold.
Never. Those 20 minutes tie up every loose end you had with issue with this movie.
There's a lot of loose ends.
Maybe there's a director's cut as
I'm
well.
I'm trying to think of like a metaphor. There are more loose ends than help me out, Chris.
No, I have no idea.
No, because this is a movie that, for all intents and purposes, makes little to no sense. And even though I was trying very, very hard at the early going of my viewing to try and make this make sense, at one point I just threw my hands and said, it's not going to make any sense, so just go with it, enjoy it. One of the things I really like about discussing movies with you on this podcast is it's the first time we're discussing the movie most of the time. And one of the things that I love hearing from you, because it just seems so innocent, you know, is, oh, I didn't see that coming, or I have no idea where this was going, or I didn't see, you know what I mean? Because I don't know, I feel when I watch movies, oftentimes I'm jaded, and even if something happens, it takes a lot for me to go, whoa, you know what I mean? But I can honestly say that at no time did I really have any sense of or grasp on this film as to where it was going to go or where the what the next scene was going to hold for me. And everything was so... I thought I did. It's many points. I thought I knew where this was going. But man, every time I thought it was zig, it would zag. And every time I thought it was zag, it would zig. And man, this was...
Well,
this
that, you probably should have that in common with Roland Emmerich himself, because I don't know if this thing was properly storyboarded or worked out. Or maybe like the German version is like... I don't know, more detailed, but I'm not really sure what this is about. And but what I am sure of is that in the first minute, they commit the cardinal sin of an impactful moment that is not shown. So, like, there's a death.
Okay.
And this is very, like, potentially dramatically interesting.
Well,
you
this,
know, like
this is
Chekhov this, would this, say it.
The,
like,
exactly. I mean, the death of the patriarch of the family that we don't see, this colors the entire film, and we don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the kid starts having these otherworldly telepathic connections with the deceased. Mm-hmm. And there's no connection between the two of them.
No, they're father and son.
But there's no...
That's connection.
You have father and son, and look where that, you know, how that turned
okay.
out.
Okay. Yeah.
But there's just no... Like, maybe are they particularly close?
I haven't talked to my father in 25 years. Maybe when he shuffles off this moral coil...
You'll call him on a giant
red
phone.
He'll be communicating with me to say how sorry he is through a giant glowing plastic toy phone. Maybe.
That would be really
you
fantastic.
You never know. Or maybe he'll appear in the guise of some shriveled ventriloquist dummy. Like, that was another weird thing in this movie, but...
Well, it's just hilarious. Well, not hilarious, but it's very impactful and incredibly dramatic, and you would think that this would inform or color. I mean, the audience's expectations are there. You don't just have a funeral.
Well,
like, that's bizarre.
I'm thinking maybe kids' movie. They thought that might have been a little too disturbing. I know, despite what's going to happen in the in 80 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
You're right. I mean, yes, that's very germane to the plot in the sense that we have a single mother, recently widowed, raising a young child by the name of Joey. And Joey obviously is having a very, as anybody would, having a very difficult time coming to terms with the death of his father.
Yeah, but he's also coming to terms with, like, gross bullying in school, which really has nothing tied into the fact that his father passed. Like, there's no rhyme or reason. If anything, they should, reach their arms out to him.
But see, that's the thing, like, when I... Continue saying that, I'm going to say exactly what crossed my mind as I was watching this. They should be reaching out their arms and saying, "We're so sorry," right? You know, instead, they're making fun of this poor kid. Like, it's his fault that his father passed away. And you might think that's so far-fetched, dude. But this movie was made in 1985, right? Now, nowadays, divorce is so commonplace, right? It's almost more strange to find parents are still together. Now, when I was a child, my parents got divorced when I was 2 years old. Now, when I was I distinctly remember being made fun of in the schoolyard in grade one. Ha 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 ha, your parents are divorced.
Really?
Yeah.
So they understood the concept of divorce at like age seven.
Well, first of all, again, divorce is something that was so much more atypical than today that it, like, you know, maybe I was the only kid in the class whose parents weren't together. But I'm saying kids are cruel, and they will latch on to anything to make fun of you, whether it's a death in the family, whether it's your parents splitting up.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only thing that's beyond the pale would be a physical disability, and everything else is fair game. That was violated, too.
There was a blind kid who got bullied in one of the schools I went to. I was only there for a semester. But
Jesus,
yeah.
I didn't see that coming. Neither did he. Oh,
he did, man.
Oh, that's rough.
I'll just give you a little tangent right now. Just a quick little story, okay? So we had this blind kid, right? And he was a great guy. Like, I would see him in the schoolyard, and he'd be off in the corner by himself. And one day, I went up and spoke to him, and I found out he was really funny. He did really great impressions. He did Ronald Reagan. He did Alf. Anyway, to make a long story short, because we have a lot to talk about this movie, one of the bullies decided to mess with him and to push him and shove him, and he threw a punch.
Wow.
And my blind friend, it's like Daredevil. He caught the fist in midair and returned a punch of his own. So
oh
he saw
God.
It coming. Yeah.
Wow.
Those are some honed senses. I'm glad that we were on the same side, him and I.
Wow. Well, there's also the JCVD scene where he's blindfolded and given this like a wonderful... Well, it's a common staple of martial arts movies. So he developed his other senses that because this one was in deficit. Wow.
So yes.
That's depressing.
When I saw the kids making fun of him for the fact that his father died and that was, of course, no fault of his own, of Joey's own, I At first, wow. I thought, like, how terrible, but I thought, how true. That's what kids are.
But they also didn't telegraph that the kid was particularly bullied in any other instant. It was just like, all of a sudden, he's just unpopular, and there's no rhyme or reason to it.
You get a sense
that... He's not the outcast that is the typical for the, you know, he's the guy, you know, he gets the askance looks in the hallway.
You remember, later on...
It's just like, boom, death.
They formed a whole conclave on how to, like, deal with this Joey kid, how we're going to get rid of him.
It's
so,
true. They really made up for their indifference with, like, well... I want to say more than 100 research scientists descending on his house to study him.
Well, see, the thing
is... It's like Firestarter.
Chris, I mean... there you go. See, this is what I'm trying to tell you. Because this movie, from the very beginning, it felt to me like this is going to be an E.T. ripoff. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely love E.T. And I was all for that. But in so many ways, this is the anti-E.T. Where you have the same sort of feeling or the same sort of plot beat, but then it like subverses it. And every time, and I remember when I thought this movie had, it's funny you say Firestarter, because when I thought this movie, when I thought I knew where it was going, I started writing down like, oh, you know, this is E.T. mixed with Firestarter, mixed with Carrie.
Mixed with Poltergeist.
And then, and then I started adding more and more movies. I added Puppet Master plus Magic, which is a movie about a ventriloquist doll starring Anthony Hopkins, plus Poltergeist.
A little
plus
bit of Chucky, maybe.
Plus The Exorcist 2, plus Brian De Palma's Fury, plus Goonies, plus Wizard of Oz, plus 2001, plus Close Encounters of the Third Kind. This is all...
Plus Dead Zone, maybe, even? Oh, my God.
In many ways, it's like Steven Spielberg's greatest hits thrown into one movie, and...
Well,
and even then you don't get a handle on this movie.
Well, it's just like, it's funny that you say Roland Emmerich went on to become a household name, which he was with, like, well, the awful Godzilla and maybe the Independence Day.
That's
stuff,
the thing with,
which is funny because none of what's contained herein would indicate that there's this prodigy at work in Germany.
Nothing would portend that this man would become one of the biggest blockbuster teams
opposite,
of the 90s.
Maybe.
Exactly. This was his last German film before making his way to the States with his writing partner, Dean Devlin. And they made... Now, it's funny, because of all these films I'm going to list, there's only one I haven't seen, and it's the one I should have seen, and that's Universal Soldier.
With the JCVD.
JCVD and Dolph Lundgren.
Pretty terrible movie, but, you know...
But, I mean, they made Stargate, and they made, like, the massive blockbusters Independence Day, Day After Tomorrow, the 1998 version of Godzilla.
Hmm.
These are all Emmerich Devlin productions. And yeah, they were ruling the roost for quite a while.
What was it? How he had his finger on the pulse of Americana? Is that what tipped them off about how he'd be so successful? Because this is so tonally off. Like, you may shove a bunch of Krispy Kremes into the frame,
okay,
but that doesn't mean you understand what it is means to be American. Like, this is very bizarre.
Do we know what it means to be American?
I think so.
We're North American. Anyhow,
yeah, that's why we produce so many great comedians, because we have
you and I personally know. our country does.
Well, just like that kind of ironic distance we have from understanding American culture and then viewing it from afar, but this guy is viewing it from like a SETI, like telescopic lens. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, this again, the Krispy Kreme, like, they eat donuts in America. Krispy Kreme, Krispy Kreme. This kid has like every NFL team in existence on his freaking wall.
On his bedroom.
And it's like he has no team allegiance. It's like they're all there. It's like
it's American. It's a game of American football.
Yeah, and the mise-en-scene extends to the kitchen where it's like every meal has ketchup. Why? Because Americans eat ketchup. Boom, boom, boom. Like,
of
you know,
course.
Just,
it's like,
oh, God.
When I was in Germany the very first time and I walked by a restaurant entitled The American Diner. That's what it's called.
And The American Diner.
And it's funny because they actually... What made it American is you can go in there, you can get your cheeseburger, you can get your whatever, you know, like, I didn't need to spend too long there, just kind of look. They had
milkshake.
Pictures of, like, the New York Star skyline. Yeah. And on every table was a bottle of Heinz ketchup. That was the most American they could... thing they could, the totem of Americana.
It's
was
true.
Heinz ketchup. While we're on Heinz ketchup, let me just interrupt you with a rant. What's this 57 flavors bullshit? I know of like three, maybe four.
Well, I mean, last week they introduced Mayo Chup into Canada,
six.
Which is a hybrid of mayonnaise and ketchup. Like, I don't know why people can't take their own mayo and add ketchup. I don't even know why anyone would want to. Hence this portmanteau of mayo chup. And there's cranch, which is ketchup plus ranch. There's all of these things. It's just like they're running out of ideas,
I
man.
I don't know why peanut butter and jelly in the same jar never took off. They even reference it on Seinfeld. It's natural. I don't get it.
What's the deal with peanut butter and jelly? Like, yeah. Okay, well, why haven't they combined mosquito repellent and sunscreen? I mean,
why haven't they just combined mosquito repellent and calamine lotion? I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Get just, on it, man. Let's fund this thing. Let's get this.
Instead of funding this thing, let's talk more about the movie because we're getting a little too tangential. So.
Well, it's weird because there's a doll introduced here. And I was thinking, like, because I saw the trailer for the new Annabelle, and I'm not a fan of dolls.
What would this be, like the fourth or fifth at this point?
Whatever it is, it's that many. Too many.
Those are two words that should not go together. The new Annabelle. We've had enough with you, you stupid dog.
It's true. And
Annabelle even had a cameo appearance in Aquaman.
Holy crap.
Yeah. At one point, they walked to a store and there's Annabelle right
well, that is some disturbing.
Well, James Wan was the director and of Aquaman.
But so, it's just weird because the doll scare is a time-honored horror tradition of tapping into a younger market without having to burden yourself with doing anything extreme. So you have a doll jump scare. That means you can appeal to the under 15 market. You don't get too violent. Here they ratchet up the doll scare because there's a ventriloquist dummy, which I think is way more impactful than a doll because it's kind of human in a way. And I thought it looked like a combination of Tyrell from Blade Runner crossed with George Burns.
That's funny because I actually wrote down what I thought it was a combination of. And facially, I thought it was a spinning image of like the love child of Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine, crossed with former presidential candidate Bob Dole.
Oh, wow. Bob Dole. Yeah, again, it's cycling back to Norm MacDonald.
Exactly.
Yeah, who most people only know from Saturday Night Live. Like, talk about a failed presidential candidate. But yeah, this thing was great, and it was somehow conveying messages like he was a go-between from the great beyond to Joey,
but
relaying messages from the dead.
But at the same time, wasn't the phone the medium of communication? Whereas
it was also a payphone and a red plastic phone.
Right.
So this made no like.
Whereas this dummy was malevolent. It was not. There was lots of talk about this dummy trying to prevent Joey from talking to his father.
But what's the point? Isn't the terrifying aspect of it being communicating with someone from the great beyond?
Well, it's not terrifying per se if, you know, you've lost your father or your mother or what have you at a very young age and you feel like, you know, there's so much more to.
Well, it's not terrifying maybe for us, but the mother was certainly terrified.
She wasn't terrified at all. She seemed to be like completely accepting of everything that happened. He was
under the blankets, and they were Star Wars Return of the Jedi blankets.
Yeah, of course they were.
And the light flashlight was on as if he was like freaking jerking off to some magazine. But no, he was talking to his dad. And the mother was scared by this because that's usually a sign that maybe the kid should be taken to a psychiatrist. And then they drop that beat, and then the mother is fine with it.
Well,
like initially she's terrified, but then nothing happens after
also
that.
Also, there's his teacher that's comes by. That's not like a CBC movies all the fucking time.
The teacher makes a house call.
Makes a house call.
Like a doctor from 1875.
Doctors don't even make house calls, let alone teachers, for God's sakes. I mean, teachers, trust me, we don't want anything to do with the parents nor the students when the bell rings. We don't want to talk to them. We don't want to see them. The last thing we're going to do is on our Thursday afternoon is we're, you know, waltzing home. Oh, I'm just going to pay a visit to my student's mother. Like, give me a fucking break. But right away, they're accepting of all this supernatural hoo-ha that's going on. Robots that are moving their own volition.
And the time-honored cliche of the doll movie. And we saw this in, I think it was in The Changeling. It's numerous, like, you know.
Bouncing balls.
Bouncing ball. Man, that's, well, maybe it's because it's just so freaking cheap. You just have someone in a closet, like tossing a ball, it's kind of creepy.
Pass onto the ground. No, honestly, Chris, I think this is the loomiest film that we've discussed in the show since Spookies. Remember that one?
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was a pretty non-linear, yeah. Kind of like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
And
telekinesis is happening because why?
Why not?
Why?
In this film.
Okay, I can get behind that he's talking to the deceased father. That's scary. There's a doll who's warning him about all sorts of crap. That's scary. But then all of a sudden he can move like glasses of milk with his mind.
Yeah.
Like, why?
By the way,
for what purpose?
A glass of milk that was actually an E.T. tumbler. So one of many little cameos I spawned this movie, which I'll talk about.
My God, this guy has more aspirations to become Steven Spielberg than like Dawson from Dawson's Creek, because that was his whole MO. And like, oh, everything, like one thing after another. There's a John Williams score. It almost seemed like straight out of Jurassic Park with these orchestral swells.
Wait a second. The score was not conducted by John
Williams. It wasn't, but it was esque. Yeah, yes, like everything about this was the swells. The swells. Yeah, I couldn't believe what this guy was trying. Man, we've taken people to task for lesser issues than this, and this entire movie was Spielberg. The entire thing, really, right?
Well, I mean, there was a, like I said before, there's a lot of Spielbergian beats. I mean, a lot of it at the very beginning, I'm like, yep, this is going to definitely be an E.T. Knockoff. Mm. And but then there's so many, it almost reminds me of like, because like Tobe Hooper, for example, made a film called, it was a remake of Mars, it was a Mars film he did for Canon in the mid 80s. Was it Invaders from Mars? Yeah, maybe that. Hmm. And it was ostensibly kid-like, like it was a kid's film, but it was weird. It was like, you know, Tobe Hooper making sort of like a throwback 50s sci-fi horror, like it just seemed, it was off tonally from the beginning. And this one kind of seems almost like that, where some guy that really has no conception of what made those early Steven Spielberg films so magical, trying to replicate.
Yeah, it's someone who grew up in, well, he's from Stuttgart, so shout out, because I got family there, but he's not familiar
like
with...
you're listening right now.
Well, of course. But there's no conception of having ever experienced what it's like to grow up in the suburbs in North America. There's none. Mm-hmm. He observed it from afar. He's trying to distill it into this production. I'm not buying any of it. It's so bizarre.
But it's not so much the faux Americana that really makes this film such a head scratcher. It's the arc. It's a story. It's everything. Like it goes from one thing to another, and you're just like, it almost reminded me, because of the lunacy that was, and kind of, and even the ending, it was a little metaphysical and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was getting a Neil Breen vibe.
Never anything anyone wants to hear.
Yeah, like it was almost reminding me like a little dash of Faithful Findings to throw in there with the faux spirituality and stuff, and you know, different alternate universes and dimensions, and
just picking up on plot points that are subsequently just discarded, like yesterday's garbage. There's the bullies come into play, and they have this protracted battle between Charlie the robot, who's basically like a stormtrooper kind of R2-D2 hybrid wandering around that's controlled by remote, and then the bullies' toys, which are these panzer tanks that come in and like attempt to take out this guy's toy. Yep. And for what purpose? Yep. Like the bullies like form this army of sorts to like further bully Joey. Yep. Like, and why? Because they end up in some sort of random warehouse or house, and then they disappear from the movie forever.
Well,
and
some of them do become allies of Joey with the pigtailed girl next door that remind me of Pippi Longstocking.
Yeah.
At one point, her pigtails were moving their own volition.
Was this intentional? Who knows? But there's just something developed, then it's not, and it comes by later. And it's one thing to be inspired by art, because if you start reading too much of any particular author, maybe it's Bonfire of the Vanities, maybe you'll start writing like Tom Wolfe, or you watch too many Spielberg things. And there's another thing to like insert kind of references to movies that inspire you, which would be George Lucas, like in so flagrant a manner too. Just beyond, like Darth Vader helmet and Return of the Jedi, like all these beats.
I was going to say that for What Did I Learn, but you brought it up, I mean, there's so many cameos in this film. And when I say cameos, I mean like flagrant copyright violation of taking other intellectual property and throwing it in here. I mean, besides all the, you know, the aforementioned Return of the Jedi sheets and the E.T. tumbler, you had Darth Vader himself for one quick scene, for one cut. It wasn't a Darth Vader toy. It was Darth Vader filling the screen with a lightsaber. Yeah. You also had, near the end of the movie, they're throwing friggin', talk about Americana, fucking all this Disney shit. Donald Duck is coming at the screen. Bert and Ernie.
Flying hamburgers.
More Star Wars stuff. And the cameo to end all cameos. I don't know if you noticed this. The Norman Bates house was in this bloody thing.
Holy shit, I did not notice that.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly at one point. It was some sort of parking lot. And then boom, there's the Bates house right there.
Oh my God. Well, Yeah. As someone who ingested lots of Americana pop culture, stuck it into a funnel, took the, the dregs, or I don't know what comes out of a funnel, whatever, spits it into, this is a terrible, mangling of metaphors, spits it into a movie, and Roland Emmerich, all of a sudden, is this guy making these very straightforward movies. Like, that's what I don't get either. Like,
well, maybe he needed the sobering power of his one Dean Devlin
to rein in his excesses.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Although, you know, one can't really call Independence Day a restrained movie, you know.
No, but it's as plot simple as you can get. Like, there's no, I mean, he's just basically paring down all these tangents that he went on here into no tangents. They're just, boom, here's a problem, I'm going to solve it. Mm-hmm. You know, almost like I'm quoting Vanilla Ice.
I was going to say, for a second there, I was like, yeah,
let the DJ revolve it. Yeah, like, holy crap. And then, but he always had these sort of metaphysical Stargate kind of impulses. But maybe that's all it took. Someone to just rein him in. And but it's not like this thing's particularly like whiz-bang, excitingly directed either. But,
well,
is it? I don't know.
All I can tell you, Chris, is... I'm gonna have a little bit of a confession.
Right, okay. Now.
When I watched this film, I was, for the first time and thus far only time, I was in a bit of an altered state.
Okay.
I had ingested some edibles, you know, and I was pretty fucking high. I gotta say, and I think that's pretty much the only way to watch this movie.
I think so, because
I loved it, man. I was on board from the maybe not the first minute or two because the edibles hadn't kicked in yet. But as soon as those babies started, once I started feeling those things, I was so in love with what I was watching. You could have given me those extra 20 minutes. I would have been more than happy to see them because I actually am going to watch a German cut and see what more ridiculous excess they could have stuffed into this bratwurst of a film.
Well, maybe it brings some sort of Wim Wenders sensibilities to the proceedings with this extra 2.5 hour or whatever, you know, extravaganza. I'm vaguely curious too. Like, I wouldn't mind actually watching it in the original German. Maybe there was something lost in translation along the way. I'm frankly mystified by the different elements of. Although, I guess the one thing you've got to do is if someone has psychic powers or telepathic powers in a movie, you have to have someone exploiting it. Exploit it they do, because maybe we should transition into what we've learned, because we might have a lot of things. How were they able to have this many psychologists, psychiatrists,
researchers descend
on the house en masse and set up this incredible research institute,
because
de facto
they,
research.
They did the exact same thing in E.T.
But E.T. is one thing.
I know.
There's no skepticism whatsoever. Well, maybe initially with the lead researcher, but they all just came in and just, it's not like, I mean, maybe it was due to time constraints and they didn't have like one guy suss out the Joey's capabilities and then vet them and say, oh, maybe this should be explored further. No, within minutes, he's got electrodes attached to his temples.
And that's funny too, because now that I'm remembering, it was his, they all came on the invitation of Joey's teacher. Now, Joey is what? Grade?
He's got to be
5, maybe? 10,
maybe
13?
11, 12 years old.
So yeah. He's got this homeroom teacher who's like, yeah, I'm just going to invite some friends, some university students. And there are a bunch of, like, you know, scholars and researchers and PhDs, candidates and professors. You're a freaking, like, middle school teacher. How do you have
He's got the incredible pull.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, he's a networker because he's definitely traveling in the right circles.
But there were really, I mean, there must have been hundreds because they cordoned off the house. I mean, there's cops on hand to prevent any interlopers or media or the general public. Oh, my God.
It's a CT.
But, oh, yeah. God. But they really, they were just all in.
They were all in, man. And I was all in with this thing, so...
Oh, well, what else did we learn there? Well, because I learned that adding a monocle to a dummy is like increases the fear factor by a factor of like, you know, 3.
Definitely. Monocles, I think adding a monocle to anything, with the exception of Mr. Peanut.
I was going to say.
Can make it pretty... You know, I'm even thinking of like... didn't Blofeld wear a monocle in the old
I think
games?
So, yeah.
There's something very sinister. It's almost like, you know... because this man is so evil, he only needs half a glass. I don't know what it is. Like, you know, I don't know. It's a monocle or an eye patch, but either one or the other.
There, yeah, it's definitely Bond. That's for sure.
Can you imagine if you somebody had both a monocle on the left eye and an eye patch on the right eye? How terrifying that person would be.
Oh my God! I'm just thinking back to some soap opera that had its one of its main antagonists who had who's on the show for like 30 years. He had an eye patch. So every villain has to have an eye patch. And they sent that up in Austin Powers as well. Yeah.
And there's something about the whole monocle and the, you know, the putting it in, the taking it out, and the squinting and looking at it. There's something inherently evil about the monocle.
Monocle and the unicycle. Colonel Flink as well from Hogan's Heroes.
I don't trust anything singular that shouldn't be singular. A monocle, a unicycle, what have you. I don't want it.
But geez, we're learning so much here.
Yeah. You learn, because what I was going to say, what I learned is all the different cameos and like the little Easter eggs, so to speak. And or, you know, blatant examples of taking other people's intellectual property. What else did you learn?
I learned that, well, Roland Emmerich took the amazing, incredible, you know, agility and martial arts capabilities of JCVD and constricted them in Universal Soldier by putting him in this Mad Max ridiculous post-apocalyptic outfit. Okay. And so they couldn't even perform all these abilities here. He was just left wandering around a wasteland like any other person might have been in said movie. So
I completely haven't seen the one,
so. It's not a good one. Mm-hmm. I have no idea where else to go with this other than, yeah, again, like the bouncing ball, the Pittsburgh Steelers, New York Giants. He likes sports. Mm. Yay, team. Making Contact is pretty deceptive as well as in terms of a title, because that implies
that there's more gonna be that contact with aliens.
With aliens, exactly. Not with the deceased, because that's something, you know, sure, you could say you'd be a spiritualist who can contact the dead, but in popular parlance, making contact is SETI. It's shooting radio waves out into space to connect with them. So this is another thing. It's just bizarre. Like, it just, this movie is bizarre from the opening scene to the end. Not sure I quite grasp the metaphysical element of gazing skyward to some, I don't know what. I'm not sure where this was going. I'm not sure why they...
There was. I love hearing that.
Well, and all this stuff with the bullies who were really evil and then turned out to be sort of vaguely ineffectual toward the end.
Like I said, near the end of this film, this thing turned into a kindergarten version of 2001. I mean, it became completely psychedelic and then metaphysical, but with...
Let's get metaphysical. Physical.
I had no clue. There was something very profound that Mr. Emmerich wanted to say with this film.
About the deceased?
Yeah.
Oh, or about spirituality. Wasn't that trending on Twitter today where Keanu Reeves was on Stephen Colbert and said something profound about the afterlife and said, the afterlife is all about your loved ones missing you. And this thing was like retweeted thousands and thousands of times. And like, oh, I like to think people will miss me. But I guess if that was the extent of anything posthumous, then this movie wouldn't be made. But again, there's no connection with the father and son whatsoever. Like, nothing except posthumous.
Yeah, but see, because I'm taking umbrage with that in a sense, because you're just upset they didn't show any of the...
Well, even if they showed the relationship between the father and son, not just... I don't care so much about an ugly demise.
In all fairness, that may have been included in the German cut. We don't know.
We don't know.
You know?
Damn it, you German cut. Like, these... I don't know. One of these days, like, would you like to revisit this with another film and maybe do ein Doppel Emmerich film podcast?
I don't know what other
Double Emmerich.
I don't know what other Emmerich film I can tolerate.
Well, Independence Day is dreadful. Like,
I tried watching that sequel they put out.
Oh,
I about 10 minutes into it.
Why?
Because I was bored. What else? Why else would I want to watch it?
The Godzilla thing was just a train wreck.
Yeah, that was
like this
bad.
Guy can't couldn't. I don't know, direct a bar mitzvah. Like, I don't know what this guy's business is. And he is a major player. How?
What has he done? Has he done anything significant lately? That's
I think he's had a few missteps lately. Yeah. But again, who needs missteps, or who cares about missteps if you've got Independence Day to your name, because you have enough to, have your children's children live comfortably.
Yeah. And Stargate spawned a TV series that ran for many years.
Yeah, I never watched it.
No, I didn't watch it either. But yeah. I did see the film, the original film.
Star rating.
Going from Stargate to star rating. Yeah, no,
of course.
No. This is the only time I will ever give a Roland Emmerich film 4 stars.
Holy crap.
Yeah, because like I told you, man, maybe it was the state of mind I was in, but I was on board from, like, I was loving every minute, to quote Loverboy, loving every minute of it, man.
And I don't think any of the principals here really went on to do much of anything. Maybe, I forget her name, but she might have gone on to do more German productions. The kid, I don't know, really.
Nina, the 99 Left Balloon singer, was she in this thing?
I don't know.
You know I have an affinity for all things German, too.
Is why I want to watch, you know, Auf Deutsch, the original cut, because they must have tied up loose ends. They couldn't have left all this stuff just hanging loose, like, you know, whatever.
Like a dangling chad
in the election. This is a weird one, but we like these tonally off movies that genre skip across everything.
These are the films that our podcast was made for, and they were made for our podcast. So
agreed.
How can I not give it 4 stars?
No, I'm going to give it a solid 3, because I was very entertained and I really liked. I mean, the Blade Runner fans will just look at this guy's face of the ventriloquist dummy and go, man, it was Tyrell from the Tyrell Corporation.
I see the resemblance now.
So odd, but I guess in many respects, all ventriloquist dummies really look alike. And ventriloquism is such a, I don't know, like it's such a shitty, shitty aspect of comedy. Like it's prop comedy is the lowest, right? In the pecking order of comedy.
Well, yeah.
Then comes.
But I gotta say, when I was a kid,
musical comedy.
When I was a kid, I was obsessed with Gallagher for about 2 years. Any tape that I could get from the video store of Gallagher smashing watermelons all over.
But is that even comedy? It's like meta comedy. I don't even know. It's almost like, well, again, a third callback to Norm Macdonald, where he doesn't tell jokes. He's doing jokes about comedy. But
exactly.
Like, how old does it get to have someone's mouth not move when you're doing a ventriloquist act? And it's like, oh, your hand's up my butt. Oh, you'd be uncomfortable too if your hand was up someone's butt. Yeah. Like, oh, fuck. But in the hands of a horror movie, like...
Magic with Anthony Hopkins or what have you, yeah.
Maybe, and I'll throw out, like, Pin as well, even though that was a dummy of another sort. And there's a fabulous Canadian film. This is a medical dummy that had anthropomorphic qualities. Yeah. And I thought this is way more impactful, again, than dolls, because they're more human-like. I almost said humanoid, like Blade Runner again. But the ventriloquist part of this was the best part of the movie, and that's why I would almost raise my rating to 3.25, because at one point Joey tries to bury it, which is like the common trope of like an evil doll movie where you try and get rid of it and it comes back, mm-hmm. and he's like shoveling dirt onto its face, and this was great because he knew he would come back and the bullies are spying on Joey with binoculars. And why, I'm not sure. And they're going, what's he burying? And it's such weird filmmaking. It's like, what's he burying indeed? Because I missed it the first go around. And then I rewatched it, and then I was like, oh, he's burying the stupid doll. And then it comes back to haunt him, comes back to life, performs. Did it perform telekinetic feats? Like, I'm not sure what this doll did beyond, like, scaring the kid. Like, it was weird.
Well, it was some sort of evil...
some sort of...
evil conduit of some sort that would... Because then they started talking about parallel dimensions and go through this door and, you know, something about the Joey was stuck in another world because he has doubts. So that was another thing about believing in yourself.
Oh, my God.
That was a message. So it was like, do you trust a dummy? Do you trust this? I don't know.
This was like a Ouija board movie in many ways without the Ouija.
This was a Neil Breen movie. That's what it was. And it was like if Steven Spielberg was lobotomized and they had given Neil Breen's brain, this is what would have been made. So fantastic.
Well, good on that. I almost want to, well, I do definitely want to investigate some more Neil Breen, because this guy, he's an incredible filmmaker.
Really,
in many ways.
Because I actually watched a couple more Neil Breen movies besides Fateful Findings.
Oh, my God.
They're pretty much the same bloody thing over and over and over again.
Well, that's okay, though, because but I think Neil, like, really emphasizes the metaphysical. He puts that front and center, whereas Roland, it's almost like they're buddies with us. Like, he attacks that on as sort of an aside, whereas he really wants to exercise. Maybe he has his own, you know, personal issues with missing people and how you cope with grief, which this movie doesn't really deal with at all, even though that's the setup. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't deal with grief, which is weird as well. Like, we could go on and on talking about how tonally off this was. But 3.25. Yeah, I'm gonna raise the stakes here. 3.25 here, almost 3.5. This is another fun one.
Yep.
We hope you've had fun listening to our podcast, because we're going to investigate some more 90s horror to come, and then we're going to do some action and, of course, some new horror that's coming down the pike. No spoilers here. You're going to really enjoy it as we move into the summer months. And we shall talk to you soon.
Take care.